He said, I was here a year, it was pretty much a year ago, I think it was May last year. I'd left Colchester Baptist Church where I'd been minister for 14 years, along for 7 of those years this year. The best years of my time, if I talked about this. And felt that it was time to leave. The area that we lived in Colchester for those 14 years was growing massively. Housing estates were coming. The Anglican parish that I live in, I was looking at statistics. In 2000, there were 6,000 residents. By 2028, there's going to be 28,000 residents in that one area. So I thought, oh, look, that's just the one area that we live in. So the growth was happening, and I just had an increasing sense that eventually, as my time was coming to an end of the ministry at Colchester Baptist, that this was where I needed to be, rooted in the local community and seeing plenty of rivers. Some lovely churches in that area who I partner in and very much been welcomed into the family, but plenty of space for us to build all sorts of types of church communities in that area. And for me, it was about church which was rooted in the homes, in areas within the local community, not worrying about a building in this initial stage, maybe never, I don't know, but how we can be in the places where people are in the local community. I went, so our family kind of committed to this. I went on my own, not with a team from Colchester Baptist to plant. I felt really important that it needed to be people who lived in that area and going out to discover and seek out who were the people that God had placed them already to draw together to start to form this church. So I kind of went out on my own, having an inkling of some people who were around, who were Christians in the area that might want to get involved. And amazingly, at the beginning of this year, in January, a group of 6 of us started to gather together regularly to meet and pray. So we've been doing some activities before that have gathered that group together. But 6 people, 3 of us, live on the estate I live on, which was amazing. 1 on an estate just up the main road from the main Colchester Hospital, we're at the bottom, there at the top. And a couple of other people who wanted to commit to meeting and praying and discerning together what God wanted to do through us for the local community, people with a heart and mission in the area. And that, I just was blown away at the beginning of the year when we had this little group, and it had moved from my, you know, the vision God had given me to connecting with people where God had also been giving them a vision, giving them a heart, and we came together. So that's very exciting. And so whatever happens next is going to grow from this, the relationships between the 6 of us, rather than just me having a great idea and trying to tribute some people along to get involved. So that, as I look back, just makes me feel so excited that God has done that in actually, you know, relatively small space of time. Right from the beginning, we were just being experimental. I was doing what I wanted to do. I was like, what do I want to do, church? And started doing it. So we live right by the country park. So once a month, we've been going into the woods and do Forest Church. And we've had some local family, just had some connections, word of mouth. Some families from a bit further afield have come as well. And we've had between 6 or 25 of us pottering up to the woods and doing some kind of Christian thing in nature. We just had our first anniversary and we returned back to the Bluebell Woods where we started back in April last year and had communion in the bluebells with the birds singing. There weren't any kids that day, so I sent everyone up in mind for a sort of quiet, prayerful walk around the bluebells. We came back, shared, and then had communion. And it was lovely, and on the birthday. With 1 candle on. And also, I really have felt that actually, for us, we live in a busy commuter area. We're right by the main line station. And we're right by the hospital. And there's more and more families moving into the area because it's always new housing. People coming up, moving up from urban Essex and North London and areas like that to commute. How can we build church that is a place which is restful and relaxing? It doesn't get people into jobs and rotas and things like that, but how can we create a space where people can just come and be and not have to worry too much about doing? And so another activity that we started to do was just having a breakfast at the sort of time that parents would drop kids off at school, come to ours, cook a breakfast. I'm not a great cook, but I am really good at baking. The amount of bacon we cook in our church is incredible. And then just have a time of quiet and meditative prayer, looking at scripture and relaxing and just allowing God to speak to us in the quiet. And that's been a very powerful time. And from that, a few of us have started to gather to look at the Bible together, but using, as we've started so far, using films. And we've been using that very challenging film, I, Daniel Blake, that looks at the benefit system and injustice that's going on around us in our communities. And it's not only got us talking about that, but actually people have been able to talk about some of the really difficult challenges in their lives, and it's become very deep and quite emotional at times. Forget tissues out. But a couple of ladies that have started to come recently who have something of a faith, but just haven't really been able to grow and express that in other places around, have really been able to go deep with their faith. And we've seen that growth, that deep growth going on in their lives again, which has just been such a privilege to witness as well. And we're also, because we have the park, we're also just starting a community walk. So we're just going to have a time once a month when we're walking in Highwoods Country Park. And if a dog walker or someone about dogs, others want to come and join us, then they will. And we had our first little one with five of us. And again, just the power of walking with people and being able to talk and get to know and break down barriers is very powerful. So that's kind of what we're doing. I'm helping in the school. I'm meeting when the local community council has a meet and greet. I just sort of turn up and drink all their coffee and things like that. I basically anywhere where there's food, I'll go and chat. And that's what we're seeking to do, to give ourselves time to be present and available and prayerful and open. And just what happens when you're in that place is amazing, because you don't feel like you've done anything at all. God's doing the work and opening up the conversations. And we've also, as churches together in that area, run the Make Lunch project last summer, where we were feeding families who'd be on preschool meals during term time. We've been providing free meals for them. Just a small number of families came, but we're looking at that project again. Just cooking simple food, getting around the table with people, and just seeing what do people need, what do people want to talk about, and the mums have been coming and sharing. One of our mums last year said that was her holiday. That was the only holiday. Some of her kids had gone off with their dad for a holiday, but she had no holiday away from home. But every Thursday she came. She did every craft with going. Her kids went off and played. And she had a wonderful time. And she just was childlike. And it was like that was her summer holiday for her, because she couldn't afford to have one otherwise. So again, just special opportunities to relate with people. And that's been the biggest joy of the whole thing. I don't have Beacon's Meet on Instagram. It's very exciting. Nick has more to go to now, don't you, since you left Cultures about this? I'm making up for it. I've gone the other way. So, in terms of my journey and how it relates to the readings that we had today, well, what I've experienced in that is I keep coming back to the stories of the disciples. There's a whole load of stories of the disciples in the Gospels that I go, oh, yes, that's how I feel now, and that's what's going on now, and then that's where I see myself now. But I just want to share with you from the ones that we read this morning and another one as well, just a few different ways that I've been encountering those stories in my journey over this last year. And hopefully, God will speak to you, and there'll be something in my journey and my reflection that helps you wherever you are in your journey with God. So I want to start with that story, the early story with the fishermen, when they first were called by Jesus. And for me, that became a theme early on as well, because I became struck by how the disciples were compelled to follow Jesus. So in the story, the Gospels will tell it slightly differently. There's different purposes, different communities that they're telling the stories to. And we know from some of the Gospels that John the Baptist, he was already out preparing the way, preaching about Jesus. We know that Simon Peter's brother Andrew was a disciple of John. So they would have had an awareness of who this guy was. He didn't just walk up to them out of nowhere. But still, even with that preparation, the Gospel accounts, they encourage us to see that the fisherman following Jesus was an instant response. So in Matthew's Gospel, when Jesus says, follow me, says they left, dropped their nets and left immediately. And in Mark's gospel, it says that they left without delay. And that gives the impression, and encourages them to see it as an automatic choice. Like they didn't have too much to think through. They just had to do what they had to do and they had nothing to lose. And I think it's fascinating that we see Jesus going around often at the edge of the lake and meeting these people. We don't get any stories of Jesus going around like the sort of synagogue training schools, you know, the grammar schools of the day. He's not talking to the young men there. And I wonder if Jesus, knowing human nature, he knew who would have most to lose if they followed him, and so who might be more reluctant. Because ironically and sadly, it would have been the people who were studying the religious life that would have had more to lose by following Jesus. It would have taken them away from all of that kudos and reputation and the order and the structure and the and all of it would have given them. And I think that that could be a really significant thing for us to take on board in our churches. Because we can have this security in how church operates, what it provides for us. And that might hold us back from responding to the call from Jesus to follow him in the really radical ways that he teaches in the Bible. And I include myself in that because just because I've made a move from an established church into a more unknown situation, it doesn't mean that I've really moved into the edgy stuff that Jesus talks about regarding unconditional compassion and meeting people in the margins and in the real mess of life. It doesn't matter if we're in a sort of old school traditional church or in a trendy modern church like you guys, or in a new little experimental Christian community. It doesn't matter, it's just surface stuff. We're all invited to engage with the risky and uncomfortable call of Jesus. But all of us have the capacity to choose to stay in the place that's comfortable. Actually, I'm in a place, it more fits who I am. If anything, it's more comfortable than I was before, and I need to be mindful of that. But at the same time, what I've learned to celebrate through what I'm doing is that God does allow us to find the right fit. He wants to work in us and through us in the way that he's made us, through our own personalities, through our own gifts, through what we enjoy. And so we can do what we're compelled to do. We can do what feels right, what makes sense to us. Like it made sense to the disciples to drop their nets and follow Jesus. And then we can ask him for the faith to trust that bit by bit Jesus will show us what risks we need to take. Sometimes we can take the wrong risks because we think we've got to do this or that and we ought to do this for Jesus. And we don't listen and stop to take the right risks. And we can trust that when we do that, when we stop and we listen and we're willing, that he'll give us the strength to face whatever risks it is, whatever it is we've got to let go of, whatever it is we've got to sacrifice in our lives to follow that calling. So what I also notice in the story is that when the disciples dropped the nets, when they followed Jesus, and this becomes apparent as the stories go on, they had no idea what was going to happen next. I would love to know who the disciples actually thought Jesus was in that moment when he said to them, follow me. What did they think he was going to do? Who did they think they were going to become when they followed him? And possibly one of the things that compelled them to go was a sense of the significance their lives might have if they associated with Jesus. We're all a mix of motives in whatever choices we make. And I don't think the Bible ever shies away from that. But for us, it can be frightening when we become aware of it, what's going on inside us, why we've made some of the decisions we've made. And we were at Spring Harvest a few weeks ago, and we had Jeff Lucas leading the Bible studies. Jeff Lucas is one of those people who likes to just put all of the mess of humanity out there, talk about his own failures and things. And he was talking about a problem that a lot of preachers will realize, hopefully all preachers will recognize, actually, but perhaps some don't. And that we want our message to be good. We want it to be good because we want Jesus to be preached. We want hearts to be touched. But we also want it to be good because we don't want to look like an idiot. You know, we want approval. We don't want people not to like us. And for each of us, we have those kinds of conflicts going on. We want something for God, but, you know, we kind of want it for ourselves as well. It's human nature. We can't get away from it. But God sees it inside of us before we ever spot it in ourselves. I love, we sang the song Indescribable, and it says at the end, "You see the depths of my heart," I mean the dark depths, "and you love me the same." I wonder if we always believe that. You know, it's only us that get surprised when we see some of the negative things that we're capable of doing or thinking or saying. God's not surprised. He's known them all along. And he absolutely, unconditionally, utterly loves us all the same. And he even uses our weaknesses. Sometimes he uses those wrong motivations that we got into a situation, but he will still use them, and through his grace he will work out the good for people who love him. And what's brilliant about the disciples' story is that those moments when the sheer humanness of the disciples bubbles up to the surface quite regularly, the gospel writers let us see it. Like when they're arguing about which one of us is going to be the greatest in the kingdom of God. And it makes me think that the wealth of disciples would have been focused on where Jesus, the physical journey Jesus was going to take them on, and the things that they were going to do with him. Jesus seemed to be more focused on the inner journey that he was going to take the disciples on. The disciples, they couldn't actually go to the place that Jesus was going to go. They couldn't go to the cross. But for each of them, they had to go to places inside themselves that I don't think a life out in the boats or in the tax booth or being a zealot fighting against Rome, none of those places would have got them to that deeper inner journey that they needed to take. And I know that's certainly true of me, my journey as a Christian, as a minister, and in what's been going on for me in the last year. And for me personally, one of the stories of Peter's humanness that has been particularly relevant is when he stepped out of the boat. Jesus comes to the disciples at night as they're in the boat, and he's walking on the water, and Peter impulsively, as he does, asks if he can step out as well. And so he begins to walk towards Jesus until he looks down and sees the waves lapping at his feet, and then he begins to sink. And he cries out, "Lord, save me." And Jesus takes hold of him and helps him into the boat. And at that moment, Peter sees more clearly who Jesus is. So often in the Gospels, it's directly from the disciples' failures that Jesus reveals something about who he is and what he can do. And for me, a year ago, it was like I stepped out of the boat. For the first few months, I was walking on water, and it was wonderful, very free. But then I began to see the waves. And some wave of self-doubt hit. And suddenly I sensed this huge burden of responsibility. There'd been lots of enthusiasm and encouragement from people. We'd had some really generous support that would get us through the whole of last year. And then it hit. I've got to make this work. I've got to sustain this and grow this, and I am so out of my depth. And you hear what I'm saying to myself. This is about me. I've got to do this. It depends on me. And I was in this state of anxiety, and at times it was overwhelming, like a fear of drowning. And it was the story of Peter walking on the water that helped me see what was going on. And it gave me the only prayer that actually for a few days, I could only pray this prayer and nothing else. Lord, save me. I needed to turn back to Jesus and ask him to help me put my trust in him and not myself. Of course, there was nothing actually in the external world that was creating that pressure. It was in me. It was coming from my insecurity and pride and fear. And so often that's the case. The challenge of the journey with Jesus is that he doesn't leave those deep places of insecurity inside of us untouched and locked away. He makes us confront them, and it's hard and it's painful. But it's back to the journey that Jesus is taking us on. Often we think that it's about the significance of what God's going to do through us, when actually it's more about what he's going to do in us. There's this insight from the original Messy Church book by Lucy Moore, who is now an in-law of the living. And Jesus, in this, has fed the 5,000. And this, she's talking about Luke's version of the story, where at the end of that, they want to make him king. And so Jesus escapes, and he sort of pushes the disciples on the boat, pushes them off, and then he goes off on his own to pray. And then he comes walking on the water. That bit we just saw. And after that, in the morning, when they come to land, the people have all gone around the lake, and they meet him on the other side. But when he shares with them the hard truth about what it means to follow him, he talks about eating my flesh. They all walk away. They can't handle it anymore, and it leaves just those closest disciples again. Lucy Moore says this about that passage. It's how fascinating. Jesus could have added thousands to his following that day on the hillside. He could have been crowned king. Instead, he runs away from the people who want to make him something he's not. He doesn't hide the hard truths from people who ask for them. And he ends up with the original 12 disciples. In terms of adding numbers to his group of followers, Jesus is back to square one. But look what he's done. It's been a time of demonstrating God's love and of deepening the faith, understanding, and commitment of his true followers. Peter takes a big step of owning his faith in Jesus when he says, "We have faith in you, and we are sure that you are God's Holy One." Perhaps Jesus isn't interested in big numbers and short-term effects. Perhaps he's interested in the quality of his followers and the long-term impact of his ministry. Perhaps one of the side effects of Messy Church, in this case, but we can all take it on board for us, will also be a deepening of the faith of the home team. We might relate to that at times as the home team. We do things and we don't necessarily see numerical growth, but actually we realise that there's been growth in us, in our relationships with one another and our relationship with God. I said earlier on, we've now come in the church calendar, we've come to the end of the traditional Easter season. We've had Ascension Day, and it was Easter when the inner journey from the disciples came to a head. For Peter, we find him dipped down to his lowest point. At the Last Supper, he insists that he will never leave Jesus. He says he will die for Jesus. And then just like literally hours later, he's denying that he knew Jesus 3 times to protect himself, like really consistently, like using bad words. And then we fast forward to the reading that we just had. And you see how Jesus takes him right back to the very beginning of the story, He waits until the disciples are once again struggling to catch fish. So it seems like they've returned to square one. Just a few years before, Jesus has told these men that they're going to become fishers of people. But even after all the amazing events of Easter, here they are, fishers of fish. They've gone back to the beginning. But inside, they are so different. What's amazing about the story is that Jesus is now ready to move Peter on to the next step. He repeats his calling to follow me, but now he adds a commission for a task. Peter is to care for the very people that Jesus cared for. He is now entrusted with the people that Jesus loves. It's now that Peter has faced his deepest, darkest self, exactly when he's been confronted with his weakness and that thing inside of him that made him choose to deny Jesus. But Jesus says, and now you're ready. It's not exactly the point in someone's journey that we were called them to be the minister of the church. I don't think. There's a lot to be said about having a good idea about just how limited and weak and fearful we are when it comes to following and serving Jesus. Especially if, like for Peter, you don't let those things cause you to hide away from Jesus in shame, but you allow him to bring healing and forgiveness and resurrection into your life. It wasn't easy for Peter to be confronted by Jesus, and he was hurt. Now, maybe because his own guilt about his three denials was triggered when Jesus asked that question for the third time. Of course, Jesus wasn't trying to upset Peter, but he wanted Peter to know that those three denials were completely and totally and fully forgiven. And that was the foundation on which Jesus could commission him. Share that love and that compassion and forgiveness and preach it to others. Peter's story is brilliant. And it reveals the struggles that all disciples, past and present, have. And it reminds us that whilst we might look at what we are or aren't achieving on the outside in our Christian lives, Jesus is more concerned about what's going on for us on the inside. What we experience out there might be more about our own growth and more about the development and our knowledge and our understanding of God. Now, could it be that how God does his work through the deepening of our character would have more value and significance for the world around us than those things we do in our strength and try and achieve for God? I want to finish with some words from Henri Nouwen. He's reflecting on the meeting between Jesus and Peter on the beach. He says this: he, Jesus, whose only concern had been to show the love of God, had only one question to ask. Do you love me? The question is not how many people take you seriously. How much are you going to accomplish? Can you show me some results? But are you in love with me? Father God, we thank you for that image of your Holy Spirit come and clothing us with power from on high, giving us a new identity and planting in us the character of Jesus. And as much as we find it difficult, we thank you that journey of discovering our true identity and developing our characters and lifelong day-by-day journey. Winds and wanders, we go off the path, we come back, but everywhere we go in that journey is a place for you to meet us, to go deeper, to help us understand who we truly are, to confront the darkness, the pride, the rebellion inside of each one of us when we want to do things our way and we think we know best. But to bring those in love and compassion into your light, to be healed and redeemed and made new and resurrected. Father, help us to open ourselves up for you to work in those places in our lives which we wouldn't put out there in public. We don't feel proud of. And yet they are the places of mercy and grace. And when we do share them with others, we help others to see how you can show that mercy and grace in their lives too. Help us to be people not of action and activity, but of character. People who shine your love and your light into this world by what we say or do wherever we are. As we try and give love and serve others, Lord, help us to remember that the source of that love, the source of that service, is letting you love and serve us best. So we ask for the grace and the humility